Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram Weekend Edition for Saturday, August 24th, 2024. UTPB students share advice for incoming freshmen. College is an exciting journey that many students at the University of Texas Permian Basin, UTPB, will be starting on Monday. A freshman college student may be feeling a range of emotions such as excitement, happiness, or maybe even anxiousness. The Reporter Telegram recently reached out to current UTPB college students, Luke Christensen, Adrian Ramirez, and Alondra Ortiz, to talk about their college experience and ask them what advice they would give to a new college student. College journeys. Christensen. Christensen is a senior psychology major and a music minor. He's no stranger to giving advice to students. He has worked for UTPB's Success Center as a tutor, a mentor, and a supplemental instructor in statistics. He has also been a writing fellow in English classes, a clinical fellow in the mental health clinic, and will be representing UTPB as an Archer Fellow in Washington, D.C. this fall. Quote, "The first time I went to college, I didn't really have a better plan," end quote, Christensen said. He explained that he attended college because his parents wanted him to, but his heart wasn't really in it. Quote, "In my personal experience, it doesn't ever go really well," end quote, Christensen said. Christensen said that he didn't have any direction when he started, and that combined with personal issues led to him leaving school and entering the workforce instead. Quote, "I wasn't ready to make a decision about what I wanted to do," end quote, Christensen said. Quote, "But when I was very motivated and went through the process of intention," end quote. Christensen's break from school allowed him to find what he was truly interested in doing. He started working at an addiction treatment center as a behavioral technician before moving up to be a case manager. Quote, "I wanted to be a clinical psychologist," end quote, Christensen said. Quote, "There was a point where I realized that I couldn't really go up without a degree," end quote. Ramirez. Ramirez is a fifth-year senior majoring in music education. He is a drum major in the marching band, a member of the Student Government Association, and a member of the Hispanic Student Association. Quote, "Starting college was kind of scary of me," end quote, Ramirez said. Quote, "It was a big jump for me, and I didn't know anyone here," end quote. Ramirez graduated from Midland High School during the COVID-19 pandemic and started college that same fall. And although he was staying close to home and attending UTPB, he still had a few concerns. Quote, "I didn't get to see any of my friends leave to college," end quote, Ramirez said. Quote, "I was scared that I wouldn't know anyone at college because my degree has a small department," end quote. He added that he wasn't involved on campus at first, but that he had to build up the courage to attend school events. Ortiz. Ortiz is a junior finance major. She is the president of the First Generation Organization, the president of the Theta Eta Sorority, a member of the Students and Philanthropy Club, and a member of the Honors Organization for Business Students. Ortiz said she was nervous but excited to start college. Quote, "I come from Mexico, so the whole system was completely new to me," end quote, Ortiz said. Quote, "I didn't know where to start. I didn't understand the process," end quote. She added that she was the first one in her family to attend college, so she didn't have anyone that could explain what college was like. Quote, "It was a completely new thing to me," end quote, Ortiz said. Quote, "But I was excited," end quote. Advice to new students. Quote, "One of my first pieces of advice is that if the student isn't excited about it and the parents are forcing them to go, that's not a good sign," end quote, Christensen said. He said students need to have some kind of motivation to go to college and their own autonomy, adding that being involved and finding a support group can help a student adjust to college life. Quote, "We did research in the Success Center last year, and we found that students need to feel like they belong on campus," end quote, Christensen said. Quote, "It's important to have a group of people that you can connect with, socialize with, and receive support from," end quote. Christensen said that new students should also use the resources that UTPB offers, such as the mental health clinic. Ramirez added that he recommends that students try new things. Quote, "Don't be afraid to try different things, especially when it comes to campus activities," end quote, Ramirez said. quote, you never know who you might run into, a best friend, a new person, end quote. He also recommends that students go to class as often as possible. Quote, go to class, end quote, Ramirez said. Quote, that's kind of the main goal, then do your tasks, end quote. Ramirez said he relied on a calendar to keep track of when he had classes, when he had band practice, and when he had free time. This helped him with his time management because he's a visual person. Quote, don't be afraid to ask for help, end quote, Ramirez said. Quote, if you need help finding a building, don't be afraid to ask for help. There'll be someone that can point you in the right direction, end quote. Ortiz said she recommends students wait to purchase books because sometimes they might need a different one or they can find a more affordable one elsewhere. She added that a student should get to know people. Quote, talk to everyone, even if they aren't in your major, end quote, Ortiz said. Quote, create relationships with your professors, advisors, and peers. You never know when you might need them, end quote. Ortiz said she has a good support system and that helps her throughout college. Quote, my academic advisors and my friends are always checking up on me. They're always there to help me, end quote. Christensen recommends students considering taking part in undergraduate research. Quote, I'm a big undergraduate student research advocate, end quote, he said. Quote, if you really love a subject, even if it's not your major, talk to your professors about it, end quote. He added that research was a part of his exploration process and that doing so has allowed him to attend conferences paid by UTPB all over the country to present his research and attend workshops. MDC to vote on funds for Tapestry by Hilton Hotel. Members of Midland Development Corp. will gather Monday for a special meeting to consider providing a total of $5 million for a new Tapestry by Hilton Hotel in downtown Midland. Quote, MDC will provide funding for infrastructure and site improvements for the project. The incentives are performance-based. $1.25 million at 50% completion and $3.75 million when the project receives its certificate of occupancy, end quote. Sarah Harris, MDC Executive Director, told the reporter Telegram by email. The hotel will be located at 112 South Lorraine Street. Harris told the reporter Telegram the MDC sees it as complementary to the 135 rooms that will be at the Hotel Santa Rita, end quote, adding capacity for business travel and for events at the Bush Convention Center, end quote. MDC has been working with L.S. Brentway, franchise owner of a Hilton Tapestry, on the project. Under the agreement, the new hotel will be comprised of a total area of 34,000 square feet, 80 guest rooms, a boardroom, a market or pantry area, a fitness facility, a lounge area with lobby, and an upscale restaurant and bar. Brentway spokesman Al Escamilla told the reporter Telegram in a telephone interview, the project will begin with the existing six-story building, which will include a rooftop bar. A second six-story structure will be constructed behind that existing structure, and a two-story restaurant will be constructed to the east. Quote, this is a perfect fit for MDC, end quote, he said. Quote, it's a group of local investors who were able to get funding outside the community to put together with community investors, end quote. He said the developers will source as much locally in the Midland, Odessa, and Permian Basin as possible, and hope to partner with local businesses on things like the restaurant, bar, and coffee shop. While the new project will be part of the Hilton Tapestry brand, Escamilla said developers plan to ask the community to help name the new hotel. Quote, it will be something Tapestry by Hilton, end quote, he said. L.S. Brentway has been working to bring the project to downtown Midland since the fall of 2021. Family-friendly fly into fall set for Saturday. Whether you're an aviation enthusiast or just looking for something fun to do with the family this weekend, there's plenty going on at Midland Air Park. On Saturday, the City of Midland Department of Airports hosts Fly into Fall, a free educational and interactive aviation event at Midland Air Park, 901 Veterans Air Park Lane. The event features Q&As as well as many static and interactive displays. The Grand Marshal is Aaron Kinsey, who is an Air Force veteran, CEO of American Patrols, and is a member of the State Board of Education. Fly into Fall also will host food trucks, face painting, bounce houses, and more than 20 educational exhibitor tables. Fly into Fall event schedule. 9 a.m., gates open. 9:30 a.m. Grand Marshal Kinsey's arrival. 10 a.m. Commemorative Air Force CAF fly-in. 10:15 a.m. Flying Tees, first round of free t-shirts. 10:30 a.m. Q&A with Grand Marshal Aaron Kinsey on Air Force service. 11:30 a.m. Q&A with former NASA astronaut Tony Antonelli. 12:15 p.m. Flying Tees, second round of free t-shirts. 12:30 p.m. Q&A with Caden Reese and Christian Ferris on pursuing careers in the aviation industry. 1 p.m. Q&A with Brianna Ortiz on being a future aerospace engineer. 2 p.m. Gates close. Static displays, aircraft and helicopters from local pilots, hands-on aircraft displays, DPS plane/helicopter, CAF aircraft, airport fire trucks, classic cars, a modified Velocity SE airframe used for rocket racing. Interactive displays. Discovery flights from Flores Flight School. Sign up at event. Talk to the tower in air traffic control simulation. Flight simulators. Pre-flight simulation complete with pre-flight inspection and mock cockpit experience. Basin PBS. Higher orbits. Drone obstacle course. Educational booths and information. Midland International Airport. Basin Aviation. Flores Flight Services. Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, AOPA, Commemorative Air Force, CAF, Honor Flight, Midland Development Corporation, Commercial Pilots and Aerospace, Civil Air Patrol, Municipal Court. Rig count declines for second week. Drilling activity trended slightly lower for the week, but Texas and the Permian Basin each bucked the national trend by reporting increases. Oilfield services firm Baker Hughes said Friday its weekly U.S. rig count dropped one rig to 585, the second consecutive weekly decline since late June. The count is 47 rigs, or 7% below the 632 reported last year. The number of rigs drilling for crude oil was unchanged at 483 rigs, down 29 from 512 a year earlier. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas was down one rig to 97, down by 18 rigs from the 115 drilling for natural gas last year. Texas saw 274 rigs at work statewide, up one for the week, but down 33 from a 307 active last year. New Mexico was down one rig to 106. Louisiana won and Oklahoma won, joined Texas as producing states to see gains, while North Dakota 2 and Utah 1 joined New Mexico as producing states to see declines. The Permian Basin saw even stronger activity gains, adding 3 rigs for 306 at work in the region. That's down 14 rigs from 320 reported last year. Lee County, New Mexico was the most active county in the Permian this week, with 52 rigs, up one for the week. That moved Eddy County, New Mexico into second place with 50 rigs, down two for the week. Martin County continued to report 31 rigs at work within county lines, while Reeves County had 28 rigs for a third consecutive week. Loving County was unchanged at 21 rigs. Midland County was up two rigs for 20 at work in the county. Reagan County had 15 rigs for a fourth consecutive week, just ahead of Upton County with 14 rigs, up one for the week. Howard County had 12 rigs for a second week. Energy-dedicated software as a service firm Enverus said its U.S. rig count for the week ended August 16th jumped 9 rigs to 631. Still 63 rigs, or 9% below the 694 counted last year. The number of rigs drilling for crude was unchanged at 198, 215 rigs, or 52% below the 413 drilling for crude last year. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas rose by 3 to 90, but remains 81 rigs, or 47% below the 171 counted last year. ExxonMobil continues to top the list of top 10 operators by rig count, with 41 rigs, up one for the week. ConocoPhillips lost one rig for 30, and EOG Resources was unchanged at 25 rigs. Enverus Permian rig count for the week ended August 16th rose one rig to 306, down 31 rigs, or 9%, from 337 rigs last year. The most active play, the Delaware Basin, added a rig for 167 rigs. That's down 20 rigs or 11% from 187 last year. The Midland Basin also added a rig to see 117 active rigs, down 9 rigs or 7% from 126 a year ago. In terms of trailing 30-day drilling permits, Invera said the Permian had 746 as of the week ended August 2nd, up from 696 the previous week and 646 a year earlier. Invera also reported the Permian had 100 fracturing crews as of the week ended August 2nd, down sharply from 117 the previous week and 128 a year earlier. College students face high risk of scams, BBB warns. Students in the Permian Basin and around the country are gearing up to start a new school year. Some of these students are starting a new chapter, meaning that they're looking for an apartment, getting a new credit card, looking for loans, and more. Students embarking on their new college journey are susceptible to scams. The Better Business Bureau's 2023 Scam Tracker Risk Report found that 18 to 24-year-olds reported the highest median losses to scams across all age groups. Quote, scammers target this age group because they have that new independence, end quote, said Devin Benavides, the Director of Partnerships and Community Engagement for the Better Business Bureau. Quote, for a lot of them, it's their first time having their own credit cards and being in charge of their finances, end quote. Benavides said that the most typical scams that target college students surround employment, online purchases, and investment and cryptocurrency. Quote, it's pretty common for people to work remotely, end quote, Benavides said. Quote, an employment scam offers work from home with a high salary and a great schedule, but there's always some kind of catch, end quote. She added that students who aren't familiar with a typical hiring process can fall for an employment scam. Students will be offered a job within minutes of being interviewed and then give scammers their personal information, such as social security numbers and bank information, because they think they are filling out paperwork to start. Providing this information can lead to identity theft, which comes with long-term consequences, such as bad credit and financial stability. Another common scam was an online purchasing scam. Benavides said that this year, $1.1 million has been lost due to online purchases in Texas. Quote, online purchases make things very convenient, end quote, Benavides said. Quote, ads show up of something that a person wants, and when they click it, it takes them to a fraudulent site, end quote. She added that college students are more susceptible to online purchase scams because they are online more often and are getting new credit cards. The fraudulent site will steal credit card information from the customer. Benavides said that investment and cryptocurrency scams are relatively new. In 2023, these types of scams were the riskiest, and a person could lose up to $4,000. Quote, these scams find their targets through social media, end quote, Benavides said. Quote, if there's a TikTok user or someone online that promises high gains for an investment, it's probably too good to be true, end quote. These scams target people through social media videos where a person is talking about how much they have gained since investing in something. The Better Business Bureau also recognized other scams that typically target college and graduate students, such as fake credit cards, too-good-to-be-true apartments, ID theft, scholarship and grant scams, and test preparation scams. Benavides also offered tips on how to recognize scams. Trust your gut. If something seems too good to be true, it probably is. Educate yourself. Do your due diligence and do more research. Familiarize yourself with the job hiring process. They don't typically move quickly enough to receive an offer minutes later. An employer shouldn't require you to make any purchases during the hiring process. If you're shopping online, double check that you are on the correct website. Type in a website address into the search engine instead of being redirected from an advertisement. Be aware if someone is pressuring you or is aggressively trying to convince you to invest or buy something. Watch for those who have a sense of urgency. Scammers want you to decide quickly and often use your excitement for something as leverage. Unreliable communication or an emphasis on text-based platforms for a job or investment opportunity is not a good sign. The Better Business Bureau has a scam tracker online that people can use to report a scam and look to see if anyone else has been targeted. Quote, it's never embarrassing to fall for a scam, end quote, Benavides said. Quote, we want to take the stigma out of it. It's not embarrassing because people are really smart and really good at what they do, end quote. Benavides added that scams happen all the time, and the best way to prevent this is to educate young people about the risks of identity theft and scams so that they can be smart consumers. Quote, if you've been a victim of a scam, report it and talk to law enforcement, end quote, Benavides said. WTI near $75 on hope of rate cuts. After reaching seven-month lows early in the week, crude prices got a boost from Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell's indication the central bank was preparing to cut interest rates. West Texas Intermediate fell 3 of 5 trading days on the New York Mercantile Exchange as concerns about supplies and weak demand carried over from the previous week. WTI opened the week plunging $2.28 per barrel, and then an additional $1.24 to send it to the lowest since early January, as traders digested reports of a sharply lower jobs estimate. Prices then began to move higher, ending the week with a rise of $1.82, or 2.49%, to close at $74.83. Down from $76.65 at last Friday's close, and the second consecutive weekly decline. The posted price ended the week at $71.31, according to Plains All American. Natural gas futures opened the trading week on the NYMEX with an 11-cent surge, then began moving lower as plentiful supplies continue to exceed demand. The decline was highlighted by Thursday's 12.4-cent drop, and futures fell an additional 3 cents to end the week at $2.022 per MCF, down from $2.123 at last Friday's close, and a second consecutive weekly decline. Probably both. The high number of non-physical contracts in the market increases volatility, and we tend to have higher highs and lower lows. Bruce Bullock with the McGuire Energy Institute at Southern Methodist University's Cox School of Business told the Reporter-Telegram by email he thought both the recent oil contract sell-offs and price run-ups were possibly overdone. Quote, the high number of non-physical contracts in the market increases volatility, and we tend to have higher highs and lower lows, end quote, he wrote. Bullock attributed the recent sell-off to recent factors. Easing geopolitical tensions with Iran not yet striking back at Israel, China's continued economic slowdown, and the large downward revision in the jobs number, which may indicate the economy is not performing as well as thought. Quote, the next resistance level is around $70 for WTI. If it drops below $70, I can see it dropping down into the mid-$60, at least until the Fed announces a rate cut, which I would anticipate in September, end quote, he wrote. Phil Flynn, senior analyst at Price Futures Group, wrote in his daily energy report that distillate demand numbers averaged 3.6 million barrels a day over the past 4 weeks, down by 5% from a year ago, quote, and that is raising some red flags, end quote. Yet, he added, based on total demand, the U.S. is still averaging an impressive 20.4 million barrels of oil per day, and gasoline demand came in at a near record 9.913 million barrels last week, end quote. Oil report. Uptick in oil field service bankruptcy notices. Oil field service companies in recent years have been buffeted by consolidation among upstream exploration and production companies, higher interest rates, and other issues. For a number of reasons, a number of oil field service companies are starting to have financial problems and resorting to bankruptcy, noted Grant Schwartzwelder, president of OTA Environmental Solutions and host of the Oilfield Strong webinar. He recently hosted John Mitchell, partner at Caton Muchin Rosenman, LLP, and a practicing bankruptcy attorney in Texas for the last 28 years. Mitchell agreed that his firm is starting to see a little bit of an uptick in some energy filings, predominantly in the service sector. He cited a report from Reorg Research that 5 energy companies with over $10 million in liabilities filed bankruptcy in July, the most since October 2020, and the most of any other sector outside commercial real estate. Quote, we're not anywhere close to where we were in 2020, where we had more than 85 filings in a single year. But I don't know if it's a trend yet, but it does appear that there's been an uptick over the last month or two, end quote, he said. Schwartzwelder told Mitchell the goal of the webinar was to look at the issue from several perspectives. And the first was what an oil company should do if its service provider, whether to provide pipe or completion services, files for bankruptcy. The first step is to determine what type of bankruptcy Mitchell advised. The two predominant types are Chapter 7, where the company is liquidated, and Chapter 11, where the company undergoes restructuring. In most bankruptcy cases, the key for a customer who is now a creditor of that service company is financial and risk mitigation. Quote, what you need to be very cautious about is not essentially paying twice, end quote, he said. Under the contract, the operator may have an obligation to make a payment or there is some level of job completion that triggers a progress payment. If the service provider is liquidating, Mitchell said the operator may have to find another company to complete the work. In that case, the operator has the right of set off in bankruptcy, the right to get back some of those payments against what was owed. Again, he advised, quote, make sure you don't pay twice or overpay and that you fully offset any damages you have against any obligations you have to the Chapter 7 estate, end quote. Chapter 11 is trickier because the company remains in operation and the operator is still liable for payment of services provided. By law, Mitchell said the operator cannot terminate the contract or hire a replacement company. The debtor company has the right to decide which contracts it wants to keep and which contracts it wants to terminate. If the debtor company wants to keep the contract, Mitchell said the operator has the right to ensure the service provider is able to perform the work. It either has the financial ability or the employees needed to fulfill the contract. If the operator believes the provider is unable to fulfill the contract, it can ask the bankruptcy judge to allow it to terminate the contract. Each bankruptcy case is different, Mitchell said, but operators need to look carefully at the cost of pursuing a claim against the bankrupt company versus what could be recovered. For companies considering bankruptcy, quote, the earlier the better, end quote, Mitchell said. Quote, my general advice to any distressed company is the earlier your professionals involved, the better. I can't tell you the number of times that I've received a call and it's, hey, John, we've got a problem and I'm bouncing payroll next Tuesday. I need to file Chapter 11. I say, that's great, and I'm glad you called me, but simply filing Chapter 11 between now and next Tuesday, you're still going to bounce payroll because there's no slush fund that's created. There's no sudden liquidity available to you, end quote, he said. He also advised carefully considering whether the company can continue to operate in the black on a daily basis under Chapter 11. If not, then filing Chapter 7 and liquidating the company might be the better option. Enterprise to acquire Pinon Midstream. Enterprise Products Partners continued its foray into the acquisition market, agreeing to acquire Pinon Midstream, a portfolio company of Black Bay Energy Capital, for $950 million. Earlier this year, Enterprise acquired equity interest in the Whitehorn pipeline from Western Midstream. Pinon Midstream provides natural gas gathering and treating services in the core of the prolific eastern flank of the Delaware Basin in New Mexico and Texas. Pinon will contribute approximately 50 miles of natural gas gathering and redelivery pipelines, 5 3-stage compressor stations, 270 million cubic feet per day of existing hydrogen sulfide and carbon dioxide treating facilities, with an expansion to 450 MMCFD of capacity, expected in the second half of 2025, and two of the highest capacity and deepest acid gas injection, AGI, wells in the basin. Quote, we are excited to announce the acquisition of Pinon Midstream, end quote, said A.J. Tim Teague, co-chief executive officer of Enterprise's general partner, in a statement. Quote, we believe the Pinon management team has developed the premier sour natural gas treating system in the Delaware Basin. These assets accelerate our entry into this region by at least 3 or 4 years. These assets are highly complementary to our midstream energy system and provide us an excellent entry point into the eastern flank of the Delaware Basin for us to expand our natural gas processing footprint. Our entry will provide producers a choice for reliable and value-added processing services, end quote. Enterprise had sold its Val Verde gas plant which included sour gas treating and acid gas injection facilities in 2021. As part of the deal with Pinyon, Enterprise is evaluating locations for a third acid gas injection well that would support up to 750 MMCFD of total treating capacity. Pinyon Midstream also brings with it fee-based contracts with long-term acreage dedications, including minimum volume commitments. The company had also received in June approval from the Environmental Protection Agency for its monitoring, reporting, and verification, MRV, plan for pertinent sequestration of carbon dioxide in its two AGI wells located at its Dark Horse treating facility in Lee County, New Mexico. Enterprise estimates this area of the Delaware Basin, largely comprised of Lee County, New Mexico, and Winkler County, Texas, has more than 7,500 remaining well locations and has access to at least six geologic production benches. Drilling activity in this area has generally been restricted due to the lack of sour natural gas treating and acid gas injection well capacity, as well as the lengthy permitting process for acid gas injection wells, which can take up to 2 years. RRC proposes new waste management rules. Railroad commissioners are seeking public comment on proposed amendments designed to update regulation of waste management facilities. The amendments pertain to not only waste from oil and gas operations, such as rock and other material pulled up from the ground during drilling, but also encapsulate waste from other operations for which the legislature has given the RRC jurisdiction. Examples include geothermal, carbon sequestration, and brine mining wells. The proposed rule updates requirements on the design, construction, operation, monitoring, and closure of waste management units, and helps improve the Commission's ability to track and collect data on oil field waste transported throughout Texas. The proposed rule also allows residents more time to protest waste management permit applications. Among the changes to the process is an extended time frame for a person to file a protest, from the current 15 days to 30 days. Among the updated requirements being proposed is a new framework for produced recycling pits, which are typically very large infrastructure pits and can be used for many years. The proposal would remove the distinctions between commercial and non-commercial pits. The proposed amendments would also strengthen requirements for groundwater monitoring and financial security, strengthen requirements for locations of disposal pits, and update requirements for generators and transporters of oil and gas waste, including the documentation of the waste profile. The public can submit comments on the proposed rules now. The comment period is open through September 30th. After the comment period ends, staff will review and incorporate comments. Following that, a final rule will be presented for a vote to adopt at a future open meeting. One waste management company has thoughts on the proposed amendments. Quote, "The existing rules are dated. They are written in the 1980s, end quote, observed Gabriel Rio, president and chief executive officer of Milestone Environmental Services, which has 10 sites in both the Midland and Delaware basins. Quote, "The need to update the rules is getting more acute as the industry evolves," end quote. Speaking with the Reporter-Telegram by telephone, Rio said his concern is that the rules do not do an adequate job of protecting groundwater, nor do they appear to offer landowners recourse for damages. The proposed amendments would paint a target on both the Railroad Commission and operators trying to do the right thing, he cautioned. It would also open the state of Texas up to criticism and invite interference from federal agencies like the Environmental Protection Agency. Quote, "This very much falls short of what the industry is already doing," end quote, "and falls short of the agency's obligations, from the legislature to update regulations, especially to include new developments like carbon sequestration and the agency's efforts to develop a Class 6 carbon dioxide injection program." Milestone, Rio continued, has a very good relationship with the agency, finding the commission's inspectors focused, helpful, and focused on doing the right thing. EIA, Permian will again lift U.S. energy output. Once again, the Permian Basin will provide the lift that sends U.S. crude production up to an average 13.7 million barrels per day and marketed natural gas production to an average of 114.3 billion cubic feet per day in 2025. Quote, most of the forecast growth in oil and natural gas production comes from the Permian, where we expect productivity gains, new and expanded infrastructure, and high crude oil prices will support rising production, end quote, the Energy Information Administration wrote in its latest short-term energy outlook. Dean Foreman, chief economist with the Texas Oil and Gas Association, told the Reporter-Telegram by email that Permian oil output of 6.3 million barrels per day this year and projected output of 6.6 million barrels a day in 2025, per EIA figures, quote, essentially equals the total U.S. oil production from just 12 years ago, 6.5 million barrels a day in 2012, end quote. Foreman added, quote, for combined domestic oil and natural gas production, the Permian Basin has delivered virtually all of U.S. growth so far this year, and is projected to account for two-thirds of growth again in 2025, according to EIA projections, end quote. According to the EIA, since early 2023, the Permian region has had more active rigs than the rest of the lower 48 states and has continued to complete hundreds of wells or prepare them for production each month. In the Permian, the EIA said, increased rates of production from new completions are offsetting existing wells' production declines and leading to higher crude oil and natural gas output. As of July 2024, newly completed wells in the Permian were producing an average of 433,000 BD in their first full month. Natural gas production from new Permian wells in July 2024 averaged 780 million cubic feet per day. This new well production is more than offsetting the declines in production from existing wells. Foreman wrote, quote, a new well in the Permian Basin today is initially over 20% more productive than it was a year ago, and 11 times more productive than it was in 2012, end quote. The EIA attributed the Permian's growing productivity to Permian operators successfully implementing more advanced drilling and completion techniques, including longer lateral lengths, optimized well spacing, and enhanced fracturing designs. Foreman agreed, writing, quote, the Permian Basin's productivity gains, rooted in a combination of process and technological advancements, have fundamentally enabled leading production growth while drilling fewer new wells. The optimization of well completions, longer laterals, and better rig steering technology, multi-well pad drilling, sensors and remote monitoring, and advanced analytics have continued to boost resource recoveries, end quote. He also attributed the success to the Permian Basin's favorable geology, but also its leading business climate, productivity, and infrastructure expansions, which have remained the region's key to success and differentiators from other basins. The EIA forecasts that Permian Basin crude production will increase by 430,000 barrels per day from 2023 to 6.3 million barrels per day in 2024 and 6.6 million barrels per day in 2025. Similarly, the EIA expects marketed natural gas production will rise by 1.9 billion cubic feet per day in 2024 and 1 BCF in 2025 to average 25.8 BCF per day in 2025. Most of the natural gas production in the Permian is associated natural gas and comes from oil-directed wells, the EIA noted. And the agency expects crude oil prices will remain sufficiently high to support growth in crude oil production and associated natural gas production in the region. The Permian is also expected to benefit from additional pipeline capacity, the EIA said. Based on several projects currently under development, the agency expects new pipeline capacity will deliver crude oil and natural gas from the Permian Basin to demand centers and alleviate transportation constraints. Community. MC Alum wants to help others discover the power of words. Hannah Sanchez has a passion for literature and writing. She is transforming that passion into a bachelor's degree and possibly a career as an English teacher. This past December, she graduated from Midland College with an Associate of Arts degree, and she is now attending Texas Tech University working toward a Bachelor of Arts degree in English, majoring in literature and minoring in film studies. Quote, I first discovered the joy of reading and the power of words when I was in high school, taking dual credit online composition courses, end quote, Sanchez said.
Sanchez is no stranger to online courses. She actually graduated from an online high school. Quote, I've been taking online courses since January of 2020, end quote, she explained. Quote, I was a student at Legacy High School and did well, but I just really didn't enjoy high school life. So I enrolled in an online school and received a high school diploma as a homeschool student. I guess it was a bit prophetic that I decided to switch to online courses in January of 2020, just 2 months before the pandemic began. By the time everyone else had gone on to an online world, I had already mastered it. After completing high school, I enrolled in Midland College in the fall of 2022. When I took my first English literature class at Midland College, I knew that I wanted to turn my interest in literature and writing into a future career. My ultimate goal is to get a master's degree in English and then teach at the college level. All of my college-level English courses have given me new insights and perspectives. They enabled me to see the world in new ways, and I want to help others do the same, end quote. Quote, Hannah is one of the most impressive students I have taught, end quote, William Chris Brown, MC English professor and department chair, said. Quote, throughout the British Literature 2 class that she took with me, I was impressed at what an excellent reader she was. She reads like I do. She underlines, annotates, and then takes further notes on top of her notes. I always enjoyed her insights into the literature she read because she is such a perceptive, unique thinker. Quote, Hannah is also an excellent bigger picture thinker, but she understands the importance of details as well. She has an incredibly strong desire to learn and improve her craft of writing. She started the semester strong and wanted to get even better. I have never had a student who was more eager for criticism for her work than Hannah. If there was a grammar or punctuation problem that I pointed out in my comments on her reading/study guides or drafts, she actively sought to correct the problem. Hannah is the kind of student who has no use for a compliment. She only wants to know how she can improve. Not only is Hannah an excellent reader and writer, but she is a charismatic, enthusiastic oral communicator. Hannah was excited to talk about the British literature we read. She always had perspective comments, yet she was also interested in what her peers had to say. She often related her thoughts on the text to what her peers said, end quote. During Brown's British literature course, Sanchez wrote a paper entitled, quote, The Longing for Socioeconomic Justice, end quote. In April 2024, she was one of only eight community college students selected throughout the U.S. to present at the Sigma Tau Delta National Convention for English Honor Societies. Quote, the paper was analyzing the works of Romantic era British poets, William Wordsworth and Percy Bysshe Shelley, end quote, she stated. Quote, Wordsworth launched the Romantic Age in English literature, and Shelley is considered one of the major English Romantic poets, end quote. Quote, I admire Hannah's confidence in public speaking contexts, end quote, Brown noted. Quote, Hannah won second place for short fiction in the 2023 Rebecca T. Watson Creative Writing Contest, and read an excerpt at the awards ceremony. More recently, she read a creative nonfiction piece at an open mic night at the Fasken Learning Resource Center. I'm impressed with her presentation voice. She speaks confidently and clearly with a commanding presence. I predict that one day I'm going to be at a conference and welcoming Dr. Hannah Sanchez to present on a panel, end quote. While Sanchez said that she enjoys studying historical authors, her favorite authors are those from the 20th and 21st centuries. Currently, she enjoys reading the works of Patti Smith and Otessa Mosfeg. Besides literature, Sanchez said that her other interest is film. Quote, I log all the films that I watch, end quote, she stated. Quote, so far in 2024, I've already watched well over 100 films. I find that I get stuck on different film niches. My most recent niche has been old Olympic documentaries. I'm not sure if this is still the case, but in the past, when a country was selected to host the Olympics, the country had to produce a documentary about the competitions. If the documentary was filmed in a language other than English, the film has either been dubbed into English or there are English subtitles. I am finding these so interesting. Most of the films that I watch are older. I keep telling myself that I need to watch something more contemporary, end quote. Thanks to dual credit courses that she took while in high school, 20-year-old Sanchez was able to graduate from MC with an associate degree in just 18 months. After completing Midland College in December 2023, she immediately enrolled at Texas Tech, but stayed in Midland taking online courses during the 2024 spring semester. She has now moved to Lubbock to continue her bachelor's degree, which she hopes to complete in December 2025 or May 2026. She said that she is looking forward to face-to-face classes and meeting fellow students who are as passionate about English as she is. Even though she is excited about attending a major university, Sanchez said that she still plans to take time away from studying in order to enjoy her two favorite pastimes, reading and watching films with her four-year-old cat, Mako, curled up beside her. To help finance her higher education pursuits, every summer since she was 14, Sanchez has done custodial work at a local community center. While attending MC and this past spring when she was still in Midland taking Texas Tech online courses, she worked approximately 17 hours each week as a tutor in the MC Language Hub. Quote, I love tutoring students and helping them with their writing, end quote, she said. Quote, I think that may be a big reason why I decided I'd like to teach post-secondary English courses. Words are powerful. They influence people and instigate change in the world. I want to show others how to discover and use the power of words, end quote. Life Tributes. Rose Mary McIntyre, 6/24/1931 to 8/18/2024. Rose Mary McIntyre was born June 24, 1931, in El Paso, to Fred and Sybil Ludlow, passed away on August 18, 2024, in Austin, Texas. Rose was preceded in death by her husband, Norbert McIntyre. She is survived by her son, Randall McIntyre, M.D., and wife, Mary Ellen of Austin, Texas. Her sister, Roberta Carson, nieces, Lisa and husband, Brent Campbell, Jay Lynn and Dole Dean Proctor, nephew Pat and wife Tina Carson, all of Turkey, Texas. She is also survived by many grandchildren and great-grandchildren of her sister, Roberta Carson, who all loved her as Aunt Rosie. Last and least of all, she is survived by her very bad cat who shall remain nameless. Donations may be made to Cal Farley's Boys Ranch, northwest of Amarillo, Texas, or a local Planned Parenthood. Don Doolin, 8/3/1934 to 8/1/2024. Donald Bedford Doolin, Sr., affectionately known as Don and fondly called Papa by his loving grandchildren, passed away peacefully from natural causes on August 1, 2024, in Richmond, Texas, just 2 days shy of his 90th birthday. Born on August 3, 1934, in Colorado City, Texas, Don's early life was marked by moves that took him from San Antonio, Texas, to Tucson, Arizona, Altus, Oklahoma, and back to Peyote, Texas. Reflecting a spirit of adaptability and resilience that would define much of his later life. Don is survived by his wife, Ruby Doolin of Ruidoso, New Mexico, his children Donald Bedford Doolin Jr. and his wife, Leslie of Richmond, Texas, and Julie Weber and her husband, Gary of Ohio, his sister, Pat Perkinson of Austin, Texas, and his cherished grandchildren, Dr. Jennifer Doolin Blackman of Bryan, Texas, Kate Jamison of Phoenix, Arizona, Heather Lapierouse of Houston, Texas, Jack Bell of Dallas, Texas, and Amanda Owen of Midland, Texas, and great-grandchildren Emma, Ava, and Austin Jamison, Ivy and Lucy Lapierouse, and L.T. and Abigail Blackman, who continue to carry forward his legacy of kindness, education, and familial devotion. Preceded in death by his parents, Bedford and Stella Doolin, and his brother, Dr. Leon Doolin, Don leaves behind a legacy that will be fondly remembered by all who knew him. Services to celebrate Don's life will be held in both Ruidoso, New Mexico, and at the family gravesite in Colorado City, Texas, where he will be interred. Specific dates and details for those services will be announced soon. In lieu of flowers, the family kindly requests that donations be made to the Tunnel to Towers Foundation, a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to honoring the sacrifice of first responders and military personnel. Donations can be made through the following link, https://doolin.me/t2t, where an online form is available. Zane Kirk Wallace, 4/22/1961 to 8/17/2024. Zane Kirk Wallace, 63, of Midland, Texas, went to be with the Lord, surrounded by family and friends, on Saturday, August 17, 2024. He was born on April 22, 1961, in Midland, Texas, to Roy and Carolyn Wallace. A memorial service will be held at Nally Pickle and Welch Chapel at 3800 North Big Spring Street in Midland, Texas, on Monday, August 26, 2024, at 3 o'clock p.m. Zane Wallace is preceded in death by his grandparents, O.C. and Gertrude Kirk of Mule Shoe, Texas, and Leroy and Gertrude Wallace of Midland, Texas, as well as his uncle and aunt, Larry and Pat Kirk of Mule Shoe, Texas, and Dargan Kirk of Farwell, Texas. Zane is survived by his parents, Roy and Carolyn Wallace, his two children, Shana Wallace of Midland, Texas, and Casey Wallace, and wife, Lily Wallace of Midland, Texas. Three granddaughters, Kaylee Wallace, who he lovingly called Peanut, Faye and Ruby, a fiancé, Thirsa Woolis of Midland, Texas, his brother, Kyle Wallace, and wife, Darlene Wallace of Arlington, Texas, and sister, Toby Villas, and husband, Todd Villas of McKinney, Texas, as well as nieces and nephews, Trey Mast, Colton Viles, Todd Viles, Bailey Wallace, Kaylee Viles, and Shelby Wallace. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Alan George Moravchik, 12/12/1946 to 8/20/2024. Alan George Moravchik, born December 12, 1946, in Hayes, Kansas, to John A. and Sylvia R. Moravchik, passed away on August 20, 2024, at the age of 77. Alan was preceded in death by his father, John A. Moravchik, and his mother, Sylvia Moravchik. He is survived by his loving wife, Kathy, children Blake, Jake, and Maddie, grandchildren Taylor, Macy, and Alex, as well as his brother, Jack, Susan, in Dallas, in-laws Don and Robbie, Ken and Karen, niece Stacy, nephews Stephen, Adam, Connor, and John, great-nieces Juliana, Elise, Haven, and Olivia, great-nephew Parker, and many extended family members who will never forget the love he brought to their lives. A memorial mass will be held on Monday, September 9, 2024, at 10 o'clock a.m. at St. Anne's Catholic Church in Midland. Donations to CASA of West Texas Charity are appreciated at www.casawtx.org. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Walter William Clarkson, Jr., 9/21/1938 to 8/21/2024. On Wednesday, Walter William Clarkson, Jr., billed to his friends and family, left this earth to be with the Lord and his beloved wife, Frankie. Bill's greatest joy was seeing his children, Cassie Richardson and Mary Roddy, and grandchildren, Heather, William, Anna, Laura Ann, Jenna, and Thomas. He is preceded in death by his children Roger and Charles Clarkson and his wife Frankie Clarkson, who beat him to the gate. Visitation will be held at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home on Monday, August 26, 2024, from 6 o'clock p.m. to 8 o'clock p.m. Funeral services will be held on Tuesday, August 27, 2024, at St. Nicholas Episcopal Church at 10 o'clock a.m. Interment will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens Cemetery. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Kayla Beth Emfinger, 10/14/1991 to 8/9/2024. Kayla Beth Emfinger of Midland, Texas, passed away on August 9, 2024 in Lubbock, Texas, surrounded by family and friends, after a vigilant fight against a rare form of cancer. She was born in Midland, Texas on October 14, 1991, to Barry Emfinger and Laura Emfinger Willard. Kayla was preceded in death by her grandmother, Patricia Willard, and grandfather, Roy Emfinger. She is survived by her daughter, Madison Ramirez, and Madison's father, John Ramirez, both of Midland. Her parents, Barry and Laura Emfinger, her grandmother, Beth Emfinger of Midland, and grandfather, Jimmy Willard of Las Vegas, Nevada. Also, she is survived by aunts and uncles Grady M. Finger, Patty, of Georgia, Travis M. Finger, Kelly, of West Virginia, Gwen Boyles, Robert, of Midland, and Susan Jones, Chris, of Sitka, Alaska, and Darren Willard of Las Vegas, Nevada, plus a multitude of cousins, great-aunts, and uncles. A memorial service is set for 2 p.m. August 24th, 2024, at One Hope Church of Christ, 2503 West Ohio Avenue, Midland, Texas. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to Hope House, P.O. Box 1323, Midland, Texas, 79702, or https://giftsofhopetx.org. Ronald Armbruster. Ronald Armbruster, 77, of Midland, passed away August 21st, 2024. A gathering will be held from 2 o'clock p.m. to 4 o'clock p.m., Sunday, August 25th, 2024, at the branch at NPW. Arrangements are under the direction of Mally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Alvino Lujan. Alvino Lujan, 68, of Big Spring, passed away August 21, 2024. Viewing will be held from 8 o'clock a.m. to 9 o'clock p.m., Wednesday, August 28, 2024, at the branch at NPW, with the rosary to be recited at 7 o'clock p.m. Funeral Mass will be held at 10 o'clock a.m., Thursday, August 29, 2024, at St. Stephen's Catholic Church. Arrangements are under the direction of Mally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Jose Lujan. Jose Lujan, 62, of Midland, passed away August 21, 2024. Viewing will be held from 8 o'clock a.m. to 9 o'clock p.m., Wednesday, August 28, 2024, at the branch at NPW, with the rosary to be recited at 7 o'clock p.m. Funeral Mass will be held at 10 o'clock a.m. Thursday, August 29, 2024, at St. Stephen's Catholic Church. Interment will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Mally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Norma May Seals. Norma May Seals, 91, of Midland, passed away Tuesday, August 20th, 2024. The family will receive friends for visitation on Sunday, August 25th, 2024, from 4 to 8 p.m. at Ellis Funeral Home, 4616 North Big Spring Street. Funeral services will be Monday, August 26, 2024, at 2 p.m. at Ellis Funeral Home, followed by interment at Rest Haven Memorial Park North, 6510 Highway 349. Please visit ellisfunerals.com to leave online condolences. Linda Joyce Taggart. Linda Joyce Taggart, 83, of Odessa, passed away Tuesday, August 20, 2024, in Odessa. A celebration of Linda's life will be held at 10 o'clock a.m. on Saturday, September 7, 2024, at First Methodist Church Chapel in Midland. Arrangements are entrusted to Willowbrook Funeral Home and Cremation Services of Midland. Carrie Holdridge, 121-1948 to 819-2024. Denton. Carrie Lynn Holdridge passed away on August 19, 2024, at the age of 76 in Denton, Texas. Carrie is born in Gorman, Texas on January 21, 1948, to Arthur Carson Holdridge and Omalie Finley Holdridge. Gary is preceded in death by his parents, Carson and Omalie Holdridge, and son Gary Lynn Holdridge, Jr. Gary is survived by his loving wife, Judy Graham Holdridge, son James Lee Holdridge, and wife Julie Boydston Holdridge, son Alan Scott Holdridge, and wife Casey Walters Holdridge, daughter-in-law Shannon Long Holdridge, sisters Cheryl Stennett and Sharon Thibberville, grandchildren Alyssa Holdridge, Wygand, Amber Holdridge, Noah Holdridge, Ian Holdridge, Ty Holdridge, and Rex Holdridge. We will celebrate his well-lived life in the chapel at Kimbrough Jacobs Funeral Home in Cisco, Texas, on Saturday, August 24, 2024, at 3 p.m. He will be laid to rest in Romney Cemetery near Rising Star, Texas. Memorials may be donated to Texas Scottish Rite Hospital and Wounded Warrior Project. Patrick Ray Kirk. Patrick Ray Kirk, age 80, of Midland, Texas, went to be with the Lord on August 10, 2024. Funeral services were Thursday, August 22, 2024, at 10 a.m. at the Stanton Memorial Funeral Home Chapel, with burial to follow at Evergreen Cemetery. Funeral arrangements are under the care of Stanton Memorial Funeral Home. Online condolences can be made at stantonfh.com. Betty Sue Harden. Betty Sue Harden, age 76, passed away on August 22, 2024. Graveside services will be held at 10 o'clock a.m. on Monday, August 26, 2024, at Evergreen Cemetery in Stanton, Texas. Funeral arrangements are entrusted to Stanton Memorial Funeral Home and Chapel.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.